Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
It's Sidelines.
And Headlines.
Hey, are you new to Sidelines and Headlines? I hope you are, or I hope you aren't. And if you're new, we're glad you found us. And if you're not new, tell other folks about us so they can come to find us too. I've been in the media business for a long time. This guy, he's been a sports fan for a long time. We love college football. We love football, period. We enjoy talking about it. Hope you enjoy listening. We're at Brett's tonight again.
Brett's tonight. It is hopping in here tonight.
It is. It's probably already got some holiday crowds coming in to get some of their holiday meals together. It's a good place to do it and hang out and be sociable with everybody.
It is. I see the great Mike Cavan. We see him almost, or I see him about every time I'm in here.
Yeah.
They said they got the Georgia football ops guys coming in from dinner in here tonight.
So. Oh, okay. All right. So there was a lot of gathering going on over the weekend, obviously, with the big Georgia-Texas football game. Now, how did you get involved with it this weekend, last weekend, Jim?
I didn't go to the game.
Uh-huh.
I tailgated a little bit and went and watched it on TV. I will say, I need to, you can go ahead and poke me a little bit. My prediction was wrong. You picked Georgia, I picked Texas. I thought Texas would play well. I don't know, Georgia played great, I thought. What did you think?
Well, I thought they played well, too. I really think this team has peaked at the right time of the year. Remember, beginning of the year, we had questions about offensive line, questions about Gunnar Stockton, questions about the receivers. And then later on, we had questions about the defense. And it seems like all of those questions are beginning to be answered, and this Georgia football team is playing well right now. So I think I got a little bit of an unusual take on the game. Imagine that somebody told you, Jim, we've got a world-class chef who's coming to town, and he's going to prepare for you the most unforgettable meal you have ever had. It will just be off the charts, deliciousness, nutrition. It will be a meal that you never forget. Well, so the guy prepares the meal, and afterwards your reaction is, yeah, I'm satisfied. I'm full. I would eat that meal again. But world class? I don't know. You know, I really had this impression that Texas was going to come in and be a really hard team to beat. And then after it was over with, you know.
I agree with you.
They were a good team, but we pretty well handled them.
I agree with you. And I thought, my theory, I told you last week, they had an off week. They had to feel like it was a must-win game for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Georgia beat them twice last year. They had all kind of motivation. And they not taking anything away from Georgia at all. Georgia played great. But if you're a Texas fan, you got to be like, you know, all these penalties. We got, you know, turnovers. That onside kick deal, everybody, I mean, that was brilliant by Georgia.
Oh, but that was the best part of the game was bold Kirby showing himself with the onside kick and the fourth down decisions. Those plays really charged up the crowd. Now, part of my reaction is because I'm in the press box. And as I've told you before, the press box, as they've got it set up now, is kind of a sterile environment. You can barely hear the crowd. I could hardly hear the national anthem sung by the guy from Widespread Panic. So I didn't get to experience that. So I missed some of the excitement of the game and the electricity. But both my wife and other people I've talked to said it was an electric atmosphere in the stadium. And the little wristbands they gave out added to the light show, that just added to the atmosphere. So I might have had a different reaction if I was out there in the crowd as opposed to being in the press box where I was. Anyway, great win for Georgia. Now,
well, again, not taking anything away from them. I remember when my son, he was an offensive lineman, he was in high school, one of the first times he started getting on the field, you know, on special teams as a young player, he was one of the front guys on the kick return team. And I remember I would just all the time, you know, you cannot turn your head, don't take one step back until that ball goes over your head.
Right.
And I know the coaches had told him that a thousand times. And Texas just, I mean, just let. I mean, it was great for Georgia, but it was a perfectly executed onside.
It really was perfectly executed. You know, when you kick an oblong ball like that, you never know. It's usually you're looking for that second bounce to give you that high bounce, and it bounced perfectly. Cash Jones got it. There were a lot of questions about why he fell down, but you cannot advance that kind of a play like this, like a muffed kick or something like that.
Well, it was.
it turned the game. It really did. Right? And Georgia had the ball for like 11 straight minutes as a result of that.
You're right. Georgia executed it perfectly, but if you can't let somebody get an onside kick against you. You know, you just can't.
Yeah.
Texas can't get one on Georgia. Nobody's going to get one on Georgia because they're going to do what I told my son to do. They're not going to let them. They're not going to move until they know that ball goes over there.
All right, so all of America, at least all of America that sees our podcast, is wanting to know, did you get on the field with Matthew McConaughey? Obviously, you didn't go to the game, so that didn't happen.
But he was there.
He was there.
I tell you what, it was Celebrity Central down there just looking on TV. Peyton Manning was down there. I can't remember. I saw three or four guys.
Well, the Athens airport actually closed down.
That's what I heard.
We drove by there Friday night. And the runway 220 was a parking lot for all the corporate jets. There were hundreds of millions of dollars of valuable merchandise parked on that tarmac Friday night for all the people who flew in for this game. Not only Texas fans, but Georgia fans too. And to my knowledge, it may have been the first time they'd ever closed the airport down. I heard people having to fly over to Winder and find transportation from Winder to Athens and just to find some place to land and everything. So it was definitely a must-see event. Nobody went home early. It was a packed house, so it was a great night.
I tell you what, interestingly, and this means nothing, but the tailgating crowd where we are, and it's a real busy area, it was not as crazy as it was for the Alabama game. It didn't seem like. I mean, it seemed like a lot more, but it was just a lot calmer.
You know, I've never done a lot of tailgating in my life, but I got there before the game. Now, we got there only like an hour before kickoff because we don't tailgate. I'm in the press box, and we got there so that my wife would have plenty of time to walk. She just had knee replacement surgery. She's doing great, everybody. Thank you. We got into the lot, and I'm thinking, tailgating these days is really complicated. I mean, it comes with, you got to have electronics and generators, and it's no more just bringing some cold fried chicken and
I like the cold fried chicken, literally on the tailgate of my pickup. Yeah. We have friends that come in from Atlanta, and they, in exchange for them staying at our house, we kind of get to tag along, be part of a tailgate. But also in exchange, I had to get up at 6:30 and be down there and get ready to set
it's
up.
It's an all-day deal.
And I love them. I love that it's fun, but if I had my choice, I'd be on the back. I'd be the cold fried chicken.
Well, it's part of the appeal of college football, obviously, and it's a big social event. And obviously, there's a lot of people that like you who do the tailgating, and they never get inside the stadium. It's just part of being in the atmosphere. All right, one last thing about this game. What's your impression of Arch Manning after seeing him? I saw him in person. You got to see him a whole game against Georgia.
Well, he had some guys drop some balls. I just think their whole team. I mean, I'm more of like, you know, what do you think about Steve Sarkisian? I hate, you know, you got all the drama with coaches around the country. Mm-hmm. You hate just to start pointing the fingers at another guy, but they're Texas. But I think Arch is.
Hey, I thought he is playing well enough to win.
That's exactly right.
And I don't think he's got enough help.
I agree.
There were receivers who dropped the ball, and they don't have a running attack. Somebody told me that in 3 years, three games, Texas has run for 83 yards.
Yeah, I was going to say seven.
In three games total. That's you can't win doing that.
You can't. University of Texas, I mean, you can't be the University of Texas and not and let that be the case. I don't know. He's a good player. I mean, heck, he might be, you know, he might just have a mediocre couple more years or not as good as we all thought. Then he may have a 15-year NFL career and be an all-pro. Who knows?
That's right. That's right. You know, you look back, and of course, Peyton had an excellent career at Tennessee, but they didn't win the national championship after the year he graduated. And then, of course, he was all-pro, two Super Bowl championships. Eli at Ole Miss. They were a good team, but never a championship team. And then he wins two Super Bowls. And then you look at what Archie did. Probably the peak of his career was at Ole Miss. He got stuck on some bad New Orleans Saints teams for most of his NFL career.
Back before free agency, he couldn't get off a bad team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, but this Georgia team, I'll say, seems to be peaking at the right time. Now they've got one of the cupcake games coming up, Charlotte. So it'll probably be a chance to expose some of the second team players, particularly on offense. I imagine we'll get to see a good bit of Ryan Puglisi. I hope we'll get to see him throw the ball some, as opposed to just handing it off, and get a look at what he might add to the team in the future. And who knows, maybe even Ryan Montgomery gets in the game. We'll just have to see.
Well, I know we got a couple of weeks to talk about it, and we will, but early in the year, I thought this might be the year when Tech gets them, but I think it would be helpful to Tech if that game was on their campus instead of in the dome, because the Georgia fans are going to probably go over there and take it over and be like a Georgia home.
Well, that will be part of what we really talk about next week, and we're going to have a guest next week, Chip Towers, longtime journalist with both the Athens Banner-Herald and Atlanta Journal-Constitution, now retired, and he's going to come and join us, and we're going to really dive into that Georgia Tech series and the game next week, so we'll be doing that. We're going to probably record on Tuesday next week since it's Thanksgiving week and get it out early for folks to listen to. So look on your inboxes or whatever you, however you check for it on a late Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning to find the podcast there. But I really thought that Georgia's really peaking at the right time. And somebody said that maybe they're playing the best of anybody in America. I don't know. It could be.
Well, they, I'm not a Georgia guy, but I got to give them credit, you know. And every week is so different now, though. You say somebody's peaking and then, you know, I know there were other games, but the other games this week, kind of crazy games. Of course, Alabama going down to Oklahoma, and then that crazy comeback with A&M. That goes to show you anything can happen.
Well, I want to talk about A&M. Now, they're up there number three in the rankings. Are they the only unbeaten team left in the SEC? Nobody else has got a spotless SEC record. So, assuming they beat Texas, and maybe even if they lose to Texas, they're most likely going to be in Atlanta. I haven't worked out all the tie-breaking scenarios of how it could work if you've got a three-way tie, four-way tie, and all that. But I looked up A&M and looked up their conference schedule. This is who that A&M has beaten this year. They beat Auburn. They beat Mississippi State. They beat Florida, Arkansas, LSU, and South Carolina. Now, do you know one thing all of those teams have in common?
They
have a losing record in the SEC. Not one of those teams is over 500. Texas will be the first team that Texas A&M plays that has a winning conference record this year. All total, you add up their conference opponents. Texas A&M's conference opponents are 11-38.
Wow.
Which is only a 22% winning percentage. That's terrible.
It is.
So that makes me question, how good is Texas A&M? And you look, they're way behind South Carolina. They should have lost to Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
They could have lost to Arkansas. And so, but they're there where they are. They're unbeaten, and they won the schedule that's put before them. You can't blame them for that.
Well, I think they probably gained, you know, at this point in the season, like you said several times, you kind of are who your record says you are, and you're right what you said about their schedule. But I thought it was impressive, as terrible as they looked in the first half, that they came back and won and didn't allow themselves to get beat, like Georgia against Auburn or Georgia against Tennessee.
That's right. You got to give them credit for that. Great comeback.
I think if Georgia plays them in Atlanta, Georgia will beat them, I think.
You think so? I don't know if Georgia's going to get a chance. I think some things have to happen for Georgia to get to Atlanta. And maybe one of them has to be for A&M to lose. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, if Auburn beats Alabama, I think Georgia would be in.
Yeah, Alabama would then have two losses.
Yeah, two conference.
And then Georgia would be over Ole Miss because of head-to-head. So then it would be Georgia against – but it could be Georgia against Ole Miss even. Who knows?
Yeah, well, the tiebreakers are a little different now that they don't have divisions like they used to. And I'm like you. I haven't got those ingrained in my brain yet.
Got a printout somewhere at home that's got it all detailed. And if I were to read it now, it would put everybody to sleep, and I'm not going to do that. So we won't go there. But I looked up what everybody else is, speaking of A&M, 11-38 conference record. Ole Miss, the teams they played are 19-30, so that's a 39% success rate. Georgia's teams are 20 and 34, so that's only 37%. Vanderbilt, their teams are 18 and 23, which is 43%. But listen to this. Alabama's opponents are 25 and 22, 53%. So Alabama has played the toughest schedule of all of those SEC teams, and here they are sitting there with one loss. So everybody's fretting about that loss they had to Florida State. I think they've come back from that.
Well, you know how Alabama fans are. They still think they're supposed to win every game. I'm sure there's some Alabama fans sort of nutting up over that Oklahoma deal. And I think that's kind of weird, too, they lost to Oklahoma at home.
Well, you look at it was – I mean, turnovers were a huge part of that game because statistically, Alabama won the game in every statistic you could look at. But Oklahoma came out ahead on points. And that's the last I checked. That's where they decide who
most important statistic in football and right.
final score. All right. Hey, I want to talk about the playoffs, who's going to get in. I want to talk about just a little bit about Charlotte. I want to talk about conference title games. So let's do that when we come back here on Sidelines Network. Does that sound good to you, Jim?
Sounds great.
Hey, well, I want to remind you folks to subscribe. Find someplace on your screen that you can subscribe to us.
Like us.
Yeah.
Share
a link to us and send it to friends. Or talk about us. Hey, don't forget you can send us some emails at sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. There's no ampersand in there, just sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. We'll be back in a minute on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, we're back here with Sidelines and Headlines. He's Jim Harden.
And this is Blake Giles. Hey, you almost got me there.
There you go. Stay alert here, Jim. Well, the weekly rankings are out for the college football playoffs. Ohio State, again, number one. Indiana, two. Texas A&M, three. Not much quarrel there. Those are the last three major unbeaten teams in the nation. And then you get Georgia jumped up to number four thanks to the loss to Alabama. Then it's Texas Tech, five. Ole Miss, six. Oregon 7, Oklahoma 8, Notre Dame 9, Alabama 10, BYU 11, Utah 12. You notice anything about that list, Jim?
A lot of SEC teams?
No ACC team in the top 12. So some ACC team has got to get in. Some group of five team has got to get in. So the cutoff number is looking like it's going to be somewhere around 10. That's where Alabama sits. So if you look at that, you got A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama. Is that it?
Yeah.
Only four. What about Oklahoma? Oh, wait a second. Let's do that. Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Alabama, A&M. There are five. There's five in the top 10 from the SEC. That's it. So that you can't say any of them are shoe-ins right now. Maybe Georgia, but... Somebody said, posited the scenario, they could lose to Tech and then lose in the SEC championship game. Had three losses. Do they get in then? Who knows?
I don't. My gut telling me Oklahoma doesn't get in, but I don't really. That's not really based on the real what ifs could happen. But
well, they got. I mean, you have to say that Alabama wins a quality win. I mean, they win at Alabama.
That's right.
That's a good win. And you know, A&M, they're banking on winning at Notre Dame. That's as good a win, if not better.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's hard to say. And, of course, Oklahoma, they don't have a giant obstacle standing in their way between now and the end of the season, so it looks like they can wind up with just two losses. Ole Miss, they got to win the Egg Bowl, and then they would be there with one loss, and I think that put them in.
I think they're in.
What if they lose to Mississippi State?
I know. I understand the question, but I think they're going to beat Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. They got to go to Starkville, I think, don't they?
So looking at if the cutoff is at 9 or 10 or somewhere in that area, so somebody's got to get in from the ACC. So if Georgia Tech beats Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech will be in the ACC championship game. Now, it's undetermined yet who it will be against, possibly Virginia, but also possibly SMU, and they snuck in there last year.
Yep.
And they got into the playoffs.
They won it, yeah.
Yeah, got in with a championship record. So if SMU were to win, Is there a possibility Tech still gets in? It doesn't look like it. I mean, did you watch that game against Boston College?
No, I didn't.
I saw just the end of the game, and of course they rallied and won, but just barely. Against a team that was 1-9, so it was certainly not a quality win, but it was a win. And Haynes King won it with his arm this time as opposed to his leg. He threw for like 371 yards.
Well, we talked about, and I don't think this is the case, but before last week, Georgia's won all these close games. You know, are they sort of living on borrowed time? Are they going to slip up and lose one? Well, gosh, you could say that about Tech, and they've been beating teams that not as good as the team Georgia's been beating.
Yeah, they had to run on twice, had to run on the field, last play field goals to either win or tie a game. So they have been living on the edge, and that kind of stuff tends to catch up with you sooner or later in the playoffs. We're leaving out Vanderbilt.
That's the other team.
They're number 14 right now. But they still got two games to go in the SEC. They play Kentucky, which if they win that, they'll be expected to. But what if they beat Tennessee in the final game of the year? That could be a game that maybe could vault them up.
Oklahoma 8?
Oklahoma's number 8. They jumped up there.
Yeah. So I'm going to take back what I said. Yeah. Vandy may be the team,
the
spot
that's out.
Yeah, the Oklahoma in my mind.
So, and it looks like Texas is out. I don't see any way for
Texas
to get in. Even if they beat Texas A&M, I don't think they get in. So that was a do-or-die game for them in Athens, and they died. And so now they just go and see what they can do with the rest of the year and everything. All right, so we talked about that scenario. What if Georgia were to get to Atlanta, lose, after losing to Tech? How much longer are we going to keep having these conference championship games?
I don't think it's going to be forever. I mean, I think it's going to change because of what we're talking about. I think it becomes a liability.
But they're so profitable. The networks pay a lot of millions of dollars for them. They sell a lot of tickets. They get a lot of exposure. It's hard for them to say no to that much money. I was reading this week about how expensive it is getting to be a college football fan. This was in relation to Florida State in particular. And, what used to be, you can get by with $100 contribution. Now you got to give $5,000 or $6,000 just to get in the door. And they actually reduced the size of their stadium so they could sell more expensive seats. And I'm in a different kind of press box because they wanted to take those seats in the middle of the field and sell those people to high rollers.
Yeah.
And I was displaced.
Well, is there a scenario where you can keep the championship games and not, I don't know, shouldn't even brought it up if I hadn't really thought out a scenario where you can make the brackets of the playoffs different where they,
well,
it's not a, it's
the
not
only
a,
scenario that I can see is if you make the championship games part of the bracket.
That's a good thought.
But that's going to, SEC would never do that because that means
one
of their two best teams is going to be out before the real tournament ever starts. I don't think they would ever go for that.
Well, that was such a unheard of idea that they were going to have a championship game back when they started in 1992.
Yeah.
And then it became the model for everything.
Yeah.
And now you're sitting here saying it's unheard of that they would take it away. And then the money, like you said, but Who knows? Nothing would surprise me now with the way things are. But I remember that first year that, Gene Stallings, not him. I mean, he was one of the ones saying it because he was in the situation. But, never, an SEC team is never going to win another national championship.
Yeah.
First year, Alabama wins every one.
Exactly.
And then it evolved into that game is – well, if it got to the point where you didn't even have to win the SEC to get in the in the two-team or the four-team championship.
Yeah, ask Georgia about that. In 2017, had to be a team. Alabama didn't even get into the SEC championship.
That's right.
And wound up losing to them. So, yeah, it is a strange world we live in now. And you look at, there are going to be, of course, there's the four major conferences all have a championship game. And the Big 12, the winner only is going to get in, it seems like. You got Utah, BYU, is Arizona State, maybe, I don't know. And then you look at the ACC, the winner only most likely is going to get in. But if you look at the Big Ten and SEC, you have to say both of their championship teams are going to get into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right.
Well, you got Georgia, Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon. That's the top four. Who would be the fifth? That are pretty much shoe-ins is what I'm...
Well, shoe-ins, Texas Tech. Oh, I left them out from the Big 12.
Yeah, that's
the team that's going to get in from the Big 12. So they're number five. And then from the Big 10, you got Oregon that's ranked up there. So the Big 10 looks like we'll get three teams.
Yeah.
SEC right now, five teams. Big 12 could get two. They may get BYU or Utah in. Again, that's on that cut line. It just depends on what happens. If Alabama loses again, they drop down and somebody comes up. Could be Vanderbilt that replaces them. Who knows?
Well, speaking of the ACC, I saw where James Franklin's going to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, yeah. There was a story that was out last week that he was supposedly, not officially, but interested to see if Mike Norvell might get dismissed at Florida State. Well, it's interesting, Florida State played Virginia Tech last week. So if Virginia Tech had beaten Florida State might have then been motivated to get rid of Norvell. And then Virginia Tech would have won the game but lost the coach.
Lost the coach, yeah.
But it didn't work out that way.
That's coaching stuff is just unbelievable.
Well, you know, of course, if you turn on talk radio this week, what's the one thing everybody's talking about?
The same,
well, Lane Kiffin.
Same thing they've been talking about for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or however.
It seems like the whole world of college football is focused on what that guy's going to do.
I even saw one of the guys, you probably saw this too, that said, you know, Ole Miss may fire him, you know, if he doesn't make a decision. But, you know, the other thing, nobody talks about it and all that. You know, is he going to LSU? Is he going to Florida? Is he going to stay? Ole Miss is going to be a playoff team, most likely. And you got all that that's going to unfold over the next. I mean, there's still almost 2 months of
football. Well, I lived through this before in 1980 with Vince Dooley. When Auburn, right after the Georgia Tech game was over with, and here's Georgia sitting there at 11-0, number one in the country, fixing to go to the Sugar Bowl and play for the national championship, and Auburn says, "We want you to come home, Vince." And he gave it some serious consideration. It was a lot of people asking questions. And I remember I got him on the phone during this process, and I said, "Coach, you know what everybody's saying? They're saying you're going to go." And he said, "I just can't make any comments right now." And then, of course, he decided there was just too much he had invested in Athens to go back to Auburn. And wound up, he won his only national championship when he went to the Sugar Bowl. But Lane, maybe he might turn his back on that opportunity. He's not an Ole Miss. That's not his alma mater. Neither is LSU. He doesn't have the ties that way, either connection. But, I mean, his son is a quarterback at Oxford High School, and I'm sure they enjoy it there. What do you make of him sending his family house hunting, so to speak?
I can't even. I mean, I assume that's true. I heard it was kind of a confirmed deal, but I can't imagine. Surely in the next week or so, he's got to either commit to LSU Ole Miss or do something different.
Yeah. Well, and you would think Ole Miss would want that because they don't want to go into the playoffs with a guy who's courting somebody else.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just totally, this is the best season you can argue they've had since Charlie Connerly was the quarterback back in 1960 or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, interesting side note. Have you read Buck Ballew's book that he published?
I have not.
Talking about Coach Dooley, he talked about that whole deal when everybody thought Coach Dooley was going to go to Auburn. It was interesting, his take, and I know Buck loved Coach Dooley, but he almost acted like the guys were like, fine, you know, go ahead. You know, there was
a little bit of that.
Irk will take us, and we'll still win.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. I think they were a little bit miffed with him.
Yeah.
And and Dooley even said that getting the team back was an issue to get them back on his side, but he was able to do that with short order. I remember at the end of the season they had kind of a big banquet, or as they always do, a team-only kind of thing. And Greg Bell, who was a defensive back on that team, was an impressionist. And he had a dead on Vince Dooley. In fact, there was a game where they said Dooley would come in and he would get on the board, and he would, every game was the same. Same thing right before the game. This is what he would say. And so there was one game where Dooley was late, and so Greg Bell got up, and he started imitating Dooley, going through the same kind of spiel. And as soon as Dooley came in, he clammed up, and Dooley got up there and started going. Everybody just busted out laughing. And he just looked at it and said, well, y'all know what I'm going to say. Get up there and do it. But at the banquet at the end of the year, they did a skit, and Bell came in playing Dooley, and he had a briefcase, and sticking out of it was blue and orange clothes, and Albie the Tiger by the tail hanging out of the briefcase, you know. So they were making fun of it. So they had a good-natured way of dealing with it. It all worked out. We won the national championship.
I'm sure the attitudes changed after that Notre Dame game ended. Oh, yeah. Everybody was happy at that point.
I remember Buck talking with Herschel Walker when Herschel was being recruited, and Herschel wanted to know, can I run track? And Buck said, well, he's always let me play baseball, so I think he'll let you run track. And Herschel had a little bit of a goatee, and he said, what about my beard? And he said, nah, you're not going to keep that.
That's funny.
Do they have players with beards now at Georgia? I don't even know.
I think so.
I'm not around them as much.
It's funny at Auburn. You know, Coach Dye didn't allow earrings. You know, now every other player's got an earring. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Herschel, the man that came over here and spoke to you a minute ago, Mike Cavan, he's the guy that, you know, recruited Herschel, Georgia.
Steve Greer stayed so much time down in Wrightsville, they had to start paying taxes down there. They practically lived down there. In fact, they always tell the story about they wanted to get out of there one weekend. They wound up going to Houston, Texas, and signed Terry Hogue while they were out there.
That's right.
He was not much of a factor on that national championship team, although he blocked the kick.
He blocked the kick in the national championship game.
Championship game. But he wound up being an All-American and played in the NFL forever. And now makes wine.
He makes wine. He's a wino.
I wouldn't say he's a wino. He makes wine.
Yeah, I think he's a very well put together guy still. I think he was a real, like, academic All-American or something in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You always have to slide this in.
Presbyterian?
The three schools that I attended college from, Auburn, I went to graduate school at Mercer. Auburn plays Mercer this week.
Okay.
You know, PC, Mercer won the Southern Conference, clinched the title, and their only loss of the season is to PC, my alma mater, where I got my undergrad. And then PC, they play, anyway, they're going for a 10-win season. If they win, they'll be 10-2.
Wow.
Last game of the year.
That's a great year.
That may not have ever happened.
Wow. But, that is good.
So.
You want to talk about the Falcons?
I don't want to talk about
that. Let's come back. We'll talk about the Falcons in just a minute. If you want to turn this off, we'll tell you when or something. We'll be back in a minute here on Sidelines.
Come eat at Brett's.
Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
Sidelines and Headlines. And I'm sorry to bring the mood down. Those Atlanta Falcons.
I know. We were having a great night until you brought up the Falcons.
It's mystifying how they just seem to always find ways to come up just short. Of course, they gave up a career passing day by Bryce Young for Charlotte last week, the Panthers. And Carolina Panthers, and it was just, they had so many chances to win the game, and they just couldn't. And this, now what is it, five straight losses?
Five, I think. Well, Blake, when you and I talk, you know, I think we try to be sort of humble in our analysis. Some people that like to talk about it and be in your face and think they know everything, I don't never want to be that guy.
No.
However, yeah, the game is more sophisticated now than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. So there are a lot of things going on now, particularly in offensive football, that the average fan doesn't really understand. But all that being said, the Falcons, just as an organization, over a 50-year sample size, I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, you got other organizations that, I mean, and there are a lot of teams in the NFL that have been up and down. The Falcons have been a little bit up. I mean, yeah. They've been to the Super Bowl twice.
Sure, they've had their moments in the sun.
And that, but it just seems like, and especially now, and since the last Super Bowl, the last 7, 8, how many years? What do you think it is? I mean, as an organization,
I don't know. You know, you got talent evaluation, you got roster management, you got strategy and coaching. All those are the things that happen at the high level. Obviously, injuries can always be a factor, and players don't work out, and you know, just the ball bounces funny sometimes. But you're right, over the consistency of over decades, you'd have to put the Falcons in the bottom third of the league as far as overall performance.
Yeah.
And you look at what the Braves do, they're in the top third in Major League Baseball. So, you know, the way you manage and the way you're at the top level of the organization is important. And obviously we've seen that with, I mean, the Steelers, the team that always come to my mind, they almost never have a horrible year.
Yeah.
And they've won a number of Super Bowls. Now, they've not been great lately, but they haven't been horrible. Chicago Bears seem to always struggle. And the Dallas Cowboys are everybody's punching bag, and they're up and down. So it's just...
Well, like you gave a good example. The Atlanta Braves have been pretty consistently good for about going on 30 years now.
And as I say, I think roster management is a real critical part of that, and of course they've got to deal with salary caps and all that kind of stuff, and that's come to college football now too. You got a limited amount of resources to deal with. Now college football, they give them that $20.5 million to spend. That doesn't mean they can't go out elsewhere and find other money to spend, which brings up a question. If you had to say, is it either the transfer portal or NIL, which of those do you think has had the biggest impact in what's going on right now in college football? You have to say one or the other.
I think just the transfer portal. Just the
rule. I would too.
Because, you know, people, it's a joke, but people say, you know, they've been playing players forever. It's just legal now. I mean, I don't think that's literally true in the sense it is now, but just the mobility of the players to switch teams, I think, is even bigger than the money thing.
And they've got mobility that's unprecedented and is unequaled almost anywhere else in sport. Because if you're on a professional team, you have a contract.
Yeah.
And you cannot break that contract at will. Whereas there is no contract here. And if you decide, I just want to transfer, you can. And so it's I always say it's like independent league softball.
That's
you know? The Bombers are paying more than the Strikers, so I'm going to go with the Bombers. Whatever. So the NIL is a part of it, but I just think that the fact that you can move players, nobody gets to stack up a roster, and you can move quickly. And Indiana is a perfect example of what can happen with that. Cignetti has done a great job of finding players and bringing them in.
Well, they're... you know, I think Georgia, you would think, and we've talked about this before, you know, the rich would just get richer. And I think that's somewhat true. You know, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, there's certain teams that people thought were the teams before the money thing and the transfer portal. But it's leveled the playing field for a lot of people.
I mean, obviously you cite Indiana and Vanderbilt as two examples, but even Texas A&M, I mean, they've been good, but they haven't won a national championship since the 30s. Is that
right?
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, even Texas A&M is Texas Tech, another team that has suddenly risen to the top. And they've done it in a very short time. Now, it used to be Oregon. I mean, when I was a kid, Oregon was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they've been good for a number of years now, and they've built up a great tradition up there. But, you know, they're going to stay there. They got a lot of Nike money behind them. Maybe every team's going to wind up needing a sugar daddy to keep it going. How long can they keep this flow of money going and prop up the ship, so to speak, and keep bringing in players?
I just don't know. I cannot fathom. I'm not very smart, but I can't believe how many smart people. There had to be smart people involved, and that's the system they came up with. We went forever when it was illegal to entice a kid to come play at your school with money. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, it's just a free-for-all. I mean, why couldn't you, you know, how can you, they could have limited the transfer portal. Yeah, you get one time, but after that, you have to sit out.
I think it was the idealism of this, the amateur athlete. I mean, we've always had this ideal of the purity of an amateur athlete. The Bobby Jones, who goes out and wins tournaments but doesn't take money. And it, and the reality is, athletes are humans. They need to eat. And if their athletic skill is the best way they can make money, they're going to try to make as much money as they can make. And we look at what has happened, and you look at tennis players like Nadal and Federer and Djokovic, and now you've got the center and Carlos Alcaraz, and those guys are making multiple millions of dollars. Well, if they'd have come along 50 years ago, they'd have had to take under the table payments or something like that. And so it's just this ideal hung on. Even in the Olympics, it was a long time before the Olympics would allow professional athletes to get involved.
Well, as much as I believe in capitalism, I think there's some value to amateur athletes.
I'm a big free enterprise guy. I am.
But I also think there was something good about amateurism in that.
Well, and to that extent, we probably high school sports is right now the highest level in which you still have kids playing just because they love the game. I think back to Prince Avenue winning the state championship in 2022 when they beat Swainsboro, and they had a young man named Britt who in that championship game was the MVP, scored a couple of touchdowns, interception, just had a great game. And but he said, this is the last game. I'm not playing football anymore. And one of the assistant coaches came up and said, I'm only getting calls from colleges. Are you sure? Yes. And he did. That was it. He quit at the top of his game, so to speak. And more power to it.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted to do.
I played with a guy like that in high school. It was great. I still think he could have played in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, you know. He went and was a frat boy at Auburn, you know, and he had a great, I mean, he's a great guy, he's a banker, and does great, but I kind of wish I'd have had more, like, you know, I kind of kidded myself into thinking I could play, and then I got, you know, and then I would, you know, it didn't work out, and I was kind of bitter, you know, I should have just said, to heck with it, because high school was great, you know, I was happy at the end of my high school career.
What was your position in high school?
I played running back. We won the little private school, what's now like the GIAA, mm-hmm. Mark Faribault, his first year as a head coach, ended up at Prince, we won the championship, and we and speaking of that, this week down at Mercer, they're having the private school league championships.
Okay.
John Millage, who Athens Academy beat, is playing Deerfield out of Deerfield Windsor out of Albany.
Okay,
who a good friend of mine is the defensive coordinator.
So this is the championship.
This is the championship
division.
Down at Mercer, and in the higher classification, Stratford Academy from Macon is playing Brookwood from Columbus. But anyway, you asked me what position.
Well, those two teams have been around for a long time, Stratford and Brookwood.
You asked me about my high school. I thought about my high school, First Presbyterian, they got beat by Brookwood in the semis. But anyway.
Well, my high school was Athens High, but now it's Clark Central. And they won last year. They beat Effingham County.
Yeah, we didn't think that. That's a big upset.
That was a big upset. They rallied to come back and win that game. So kudos to David Pernault for doing that. Who are they playing
this
week?
They got Roswell.
Oh, that's
tough. Not good.
That's going to be
Oh, Perno's not watching. That
could be a hill too high, too tall to climb on that one, everything.
Well, I wrote down Prince is at Westland.
What? No, Westland's at
Prince. Westland's at Prince. I said that backwards.
Westland beat Providence Christian one-sided, and Prince is going to play them. They played in the playoffs a number of times, and Prince Avenue has always beaten them in the playoffs. Now, Westland's beaten them during the regular season. But it's been competitive.
Holy Innocence is coming to Athens Academy.
Yeah.
I know you'll be at the Prince game. I'm thinking I might go out and try to watch Athens Academy play.
I think that'd be great. I'd love to see him again. I saw him at the very beginning in a scrimmage and was impressed with him. Maybe I'll get to see him on film somewhere down the line.
Oconee County's going to West Lawrence. I mentioned this earlier. I don't know if you remember although I went to First Pres in Macon High School, I'm from Forsyth. First Pres is in Macon. Coach Dan Pitts, who was at Mary Persons High School forever, his daughter Penny Pitts Mitchell, her son, Kip Burdett, is the head coach at West Lawrence, and they're undefeated, and they got Oconee County.
Is that the one that had the kid who ran for 600 yards in one game?
He's the leading rusher in the state. Obviously, he's had several games, not like that one.
Yeah.
And then North Oconee's ML King's coming to Oconee, and they're 10-1.
Yeah, but North Oconee, I think they're going to handle that game.
I think they will.
That Monroe area still alive. Morgan County still alive.
Yeah, Miller Grove.
Jefferson still alive.
Miller Grove's coming to Morgan County. I forget who's coming to Jefferson.
I do too. And Monroe area still playing. So there's a good number of teams in this area that are still playing. And this is the time of year. Win or go home, you know.
It's fun. It's just so sad. It's going to be like we blink our eyes and it's going to be over, you know. It's such a fun time of year. Got good weather. Hopefully I have good weather Friday and Saturday. But
I got to see a good basketball game. Speaking of high school sports, Tuesday night, I went to Prince Avenue, opened up their brand new gymnasium. It's a beautiful facility. Seats 1,400. They filled up the home side for the game. The girls played Mount Vernon. But the Mount Vernon boys had been invited to a tournament, and so they couldn't be there. So Prince Avenue scheduled the Cedar Shoals boys to come in and play. And Prince Avenue's boys won 73-61, I think was the final score. It was a very exciting, fun game to watch. Both teams played with a lot of energy. Cedar Shoals strikes me as a team that doesn't have a great outside game. They were not really able to stretch the floor with their shooting, but they could attack the basket well, whereas Prince Avenue had a more balanced attack. It was a fun game to watch, so I enjoyed it.
Well, it's basketball is a different kind of deal, but it's exciting, but it also signifies football's coming to the end.
That's right. Talking
about football,
that's right.
Basketball.
We're getting close to the end. Only I guess it's about another month to go. You figure that when I've done December the 17th, 18th is when we get to play the final championship games up in Atlanta, and we'll see who's going to be there for that. So I feel like Prince Avenue will win this week. I think Athens Academy is going to win. I feel good about North Oconee. I feel good about Morgan County. I don't know about Monroe, though. Jefferson, I think they'll win.
Oconee County will be interested to me because I'm happy for West Lawrence because I have a little connection there. They're 10-0. I know the pressure's on them. there's some people down there in Dublin that probably think they're going to win it all, you know, and now they got a lot of pressure on them in the playoffs.
Well, who was it? One of the undefeated teams got beat last week in the playoffs.
There were a couple of upsets.
One of the second-round games was a 3-4 because they both wound up beating the 1 and 2 seeds and everything. But that's high school football for you. And it's like you know certain teams are going to win. You're just certain about certain teams. I don't think there's any doubt that Grayson High School is going to win their game this coming weekend.
Yeah.
Or Creekside is going to win their game this coming weekend. But about half the games even though somebody's a favorite, it could go either way. It's just an exciting time of year. So, you know, if you don't have anything to do on Friday night, find a high school football playoff game somebody going, and you'll be entertained.
Absolutely. My wife said, she said, if you want to go to see a game, go to a game. I'm like, well, I do, but I want to make sure that I save up my credits, you know, because it might be a bigger game next week or the next week. You might not want me be as open to me going. So.
Well, that's one thing. My wife loves football. So she goes with us to the Prince Avenue. In fact, she's our statistician. She sits in the press box, keeps the stats for us.
Yeah, you do good if you got a woman that'll do that for you.
Well, her hashtag on X is "My wife knows sports." Her handle is 16 layer cake, but my hashtag.
She does a 16 layer chocolate.
She does a 16 layer chocolate.
Does she sell them, make them for other people? Because I've been craving one.
She does sell them, but I'm not going to advertise it.
Okay.
Don't call.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It takes a long time to make those.
I should have. We married different kind of women. You know, mine's trying to get on the field and see Matthew McConaughey, and yours is a statistician. So I don't know where I messed up.
You didn't mess up. I met your wife. You did good.
Well, thank you.
Oh, man. Well, it's just an exciting time of year. We really haven't talked much about Georgia against Charlotte, and I don't guess there's much to say. I mean, they're 1-9, and Georgia will easily win that game, and then we can come back next week and talk about the enemy, the big one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. Auburn again plays Mercer, and then we'll have the Iron Bowl the following week, and that will, you know, most people probably think that's not a big deal, but man,
where are they playing it?
It's in Auburn.
Okay, and Auburn almost won in Tuscaloosa last year.
Yeah, it's a night game. They were such. I saw this statistics about the last five times they played at night in Auburn. Auburn's 4-1 or something. Oh, well, crazy. But that doesn't mean anything.
Well, you certainly have the kick six. That is one of those, I guess. That was a miracle victory for them.
You got Missouri. I just real quick. Tennessee, Florida, that used to be a big game. Nobody probably
cares. Yeah, used to play it earlier in the year, and now it's not that big.
And Missouri, Oklahoma, Vandy.
Well, hey, we said Oklahoma.
Well, you know, Missouri, who knows?
That guy Hardy runs for 300 yards again, huh?
Yeah. Vandy, Kentucky. Texas, Arkansas. You think Texas beat Arkansas?
But you know, Arkansas has played everybody close.
That's unbelievable.
They haven't won a conference game, but they played so many guys close. Maybe this is the time they get over the hump.
And Texas A&M plays Samford,
they just fired their coach.
A Macon guy, Chris Hatcher.
Yeah.
He's Kirby's buddy. I wouldn't be surprised if he was an offensive analyst next year.
Maybe Billy Napier becomes an analyst too. Who
knows? I heard a rumor he was at the practice last week in Georgia.
Well, I don't know there's a rumor. I pretty well saw that he was in town. What else have you got to do? You're not making any game plans anywhere, so. You know, it's a tight fraternity. Those guys, they work together. They know each other. They know each other's wives and kids and everything. It's like in the sports writing business. You want to beat the guy to the story, but you know the guy. You're not
mad. Yeah, he's not a bad
guy. Yeah. You know, so they respect each other. So, anyway.
I knew some Georgia people didn't like Steve Spurrier very much.
Nobody likes Steve Spurrier. They didn't like Urban Meyer either. Those two guys.
Great. I think Spurrier had a little image that he liked to poke people. But I think at the end of the day, he was a good guy. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure Urban Meyer is as good a guy as.
Now somebody told me that Spurrier, when you play golf with Spurrier, you play by the rules of golf. He's a stickler for playing by the rules. You don't move your ball around. You don't do anything. You play the rules of golf when you play with Spurrier. He's that kind of guy. So I don't know.
Well, he used to be a good golfer. He's
just a great athlete, man.
But he.
I wonder why he didn't wind up being more in the NFL as a player.
Well, it's kind of like he got stuck in a weird situation, a little different than Archie Manning.
With the Redskins or
49ers?
49, okay.
You know, Spurrier's was the quarterback the first year the Buccaneers were an expansion team. They went 0-14.
Ah,
he started, I think Spurrier started almost every game.
Oh, wow.
But I had a good Spurrier. We were talking earlier. I can't remember. I'll remember and I'll tell you now. I had a good Spurrierism I was going to apply to something we were talking about earlier, but I can't think of it. But anyway.
I never did have much interactions with him. You just interview him maybe after a game or something else. So never did really get to know him. He was annoyed with the media sometimes. I got that sense, but that didn't bother me. You know, whatever.
Well, he was unique. You know, Kirby's unique in that he's coaches at the school where he played.
Right.
And, of course, Kirby and Spurrier's personality is a little different. But I think Spurrier, being a Gator, and I think he was kind of more of a fan than some coaches are. You know,
sure.
He didn't get right out of college and get in the grind. He was playing in the NFL. Then he kind of, he'll tell you, got lucky and got his job at Duke and with the Tampa Bay Band. And I think he just kind of acted like a fan sometimes. You know, and it made everybody mad.
Yeah, yeah.
All the fans, he knew how to poke them.
Yeah, he definitely knew how to twist the knife and get you riled up.
I'll think of my Spurrier.
Well, write it down and we'll talk about it next week. All right, hey, we hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving, but tune in next week. We'll be back before Thanksgiving. A big weekend. It's really not a big weekend in college sports. There's not lot of big games this weekend.
Something crazy is going to happen. Mercer will probably beat Auburn.
Oh, man. And that'll set them up to beat Alabama.
That's right.
Who knows? But it will be entertaining nonetheless. So we hope you've enjoyed us on the Sidelines and Headlines. Remember, you can find us on Spotify or any of your podcast places.
YouTube.
We post a video version there. Send us an email at sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you and hear what you got to say. Remember, next week we're going to have a special guest, Chip Towers, former journalist with both the Athens Banner-Herald and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And Chip and I worked decades ago, and we've been friends for a long time. I look forward to having him come and join us next week.
You didn't mention we're on Facebook, and come eat at Brett's.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for watching.
All right. Good night.
Good night.